Thank you for downloading Atypical, the podcast. If you enjoy our work, all we ask is that you leave us a review in your podcast player and share it with your friends. It helps us reach more people, and it's always great to hear from you. Thank you again, and we hope you enjoyed this episode of Atypical, the podcast.
Are you on Wi-Fi, or are you dongling off of your phone or something?
Currently Wi-Fi. I don't have much internet, which is the issue.
Very personal question to ask if someone is dongling.
Sure.
Hello and welcome to Atypical, the podcast. The podcast where we look at life from a more, well, atypical point of view. My name's Simon, he, they, and I'm joined today by my returning co-host, Kim.
Hello.
And joining us again is our returning guest from episode 11. Hello, Kuro.
Hello.
And I thought we'd have a bit of a shorter one this week, because we did a bit of a mammoth episode last week in episode 12. And frankly, I don't want to spend 9 hours editing again, because that was a Frankenstein's monster of an episode. And I'm not going to start talking about The Modern Promethean, because Mary Shelley's book is far better than any of the film adaptations. But see, there you go. You've got me started talking about it already. And this is because I think I have my inner voice takes me off down weird and wonderful paths. Should we talk about inner voice, actually? That kind of like a neat segue, don't you think?
Very skillful, Simon.
Inner voice. Inner voice is one of those sort of odd concepts, I think, which everyone is kind of aware of, but we don't really talk about much.
Yes, you know, I remember there was an interesting tweet a couple of years ago about if someone says the words red apple to you, what you picture, and how some people will picture, you know, a specific apple, a photorealistic apple, a cartoon apple, the word apple, or nothing at all. And a lot of people realizing that what they did was, for the first time, not something that everybody else does.
Hmm. What about you, Kim?
Yeah. Oh my god, my brain is suddenly gone. I'm just like looking outside, like going, oh, there's a lake.
Welcome to ADHD.
Oh, look, a lake. Like, going, yeah.
The thing is, oh, I can picture the lake as well because I've sat there looking at it.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think about my inner voice.
Well, let me phrase it as a question for you then. Have you ever thought about how you think?
Yes, I have. And I feel like I remember my therapist did it to me before. They were like, oh, do you think as if like you're kind of talking to yourself, or do you think as if you're, I guess, thinking more in a kind of like just a generic kind of like way of just, oh, you know, I need to do this or that, or whether it's a kind of more of a, oh, Kim, you are this, or, you know, like kind of more as if like you're two separate beings that you're kind of like addressing. I honestly find it really hard when I think she said that. And even thinking about it now, I'm like, how do I think? Like, I find it hard to retrospectively think about how I think and what my inner voice is, to be honest.
Even in the moment.
Well, there you go. So I'll throw this out to both of you. Do you ever sort of like have a kind of a conversation in your own head where you say, don't forget the milk when you leave home. And then when you get home and you haven't bought any milk, you say to yourself, oh, how could I have been so stupid? You know, is there a constant talking to yourself throughout the day going on in your head?
Personally, I have, I think you would call it a fantasia. I don't have a mental voice unless I consciously, you know, I have to actively think in order to have words appear in my head. Otherwise, I'm a bit of a black box. It's sort of like, input goes in, output comes out, but I don't know what happens in between, which means that any words I do think are things that I will therefore paradoxically remember because it's an unusual event.
Fascinating. So you don't have internal monologue?
No.
Interesting. Because not everybody does. For me, I have multiple inner monologues going on at any one time. Not just, oh, look, a lake. But also, I have definable voices in my head. It's almost like if I was running a computer and I had multiple programs open at once. And all of them I can hear, I can focus in on them. Sometimes they become overwhelming and then I can't deal with everything and it becomes very difficult to focus on anything. And that's probably an effect of my neurodivergence there. But almost to the point where I can define those voices, I can give them names.
So you know, you've got basically Beano's The Numbskulls active in your bonds.
Something like that, I think, yes.
interesting and completely, yeah, foreign to sort of the way I don't think.
I mean, I think it's quite interesting. So I don't know if you find this, Kim, is that when you're under pressure, you get more inner verbalization. You know, you're running through things in your head. And have you never sat waiting for, a job interview and you're mentally rehearsing those questions in your head?
Yeah, I think, yeah, definitely. I think I do have a lot going on in my head a lot of the time. I just am not necessarily super conscious of it. And I think I do find that I am thinking, it used to be something I used to do a lot in the past, was to like rehearse conversations and rehearse what, like, you know, like imagine a scenario of having a conversation with someone and then knowing what, you know, thinking about four or five different ways in which someone might respond and then rehearsing different ways in my head about how I could then respond to their response. So, you know, all these different scenarios, at which point I never really ever spoke because I was just thinking about all these different scenarios. Or the other situation of just having a load, like at least I have like three or four steps of process in my head about what I'm going to do. So if someone tries to speak to me while I'm in one of those stages of like just process, then I can't really ever respond to them. But I find it hard to also grasp onto that as well. So it's, I often find that I have to speak out loud a lot of the time, like to actually just stop it from just kind of forgetting about it and just like losing it from my mind. So I do find I do that a lot if I'm going into a room or something and I'm just like, oh, you know, I don't know, laundry, or like I need to get milk, or I just have to kind of completely repeat that again and again, otherwise it just sort of
you forget,
dissipates. Yeah, it just sort of like vanishes, essentially.
That's called the doorway effect, I believe, which is where when you move into a new location, your brain basically resets and goes, okay, we're onto new thoughts, which means you forget that you were going in to pick up your glasses or some milk or something. I'd never really considered the advantages that might be present in living a sort of unexamined life, in that sort of I tend not to have too many confidence issues when speaking to people because I'm not thinking about it. So it just sort of happens.
I do that now for sure, because it got to the point where it was so ridiculous that I would have all these things that I'd wanted to say, I'd rehearse all these different lines, and then I'd never say anything. And so I was just like, well, now I'm just not going to think about that. I'm just going to say stuff. So sometimes I just come out with stuff that everyone's like, what? Or, you know, I just say something really stupid and they're like, oh, we thought you were clever. And you're like, yeah, well, you know, sometimes I say stupid things because otherwise I don't say anything.
It can be a bit like that sometimes. It's just sort of trying to, I suppose, live in the moment and go along with spontaneity, and then you sometimes say the wrong thing, or you allow yourself to admit things or say things that you probably shouldn't do, and if you were thinking about it again, you wouldn't have said it.
Yeah, like so, like really blunt stuff occasionally where people are like, oh, that's savage, and you're like, it didn't sound that bad in my head, but then I didn't really think about it too much. So,
and there's always l'esprit d'escalier, where you've got the sort of thinking things too late after the fact, where you're like, oh, that would have been such a clever thing to say, but I just didn't think of it.
Yeah, I get that a lot. Usually when I'm talking to you, actually.
Uh-huh.
Oh, damn, I could have come back with a really good riposte and I didn't.
Touché.
So I'm going to come back to your lack of a voice in a second, but Kim, is your inner voice, is it your voice? And do you have just the one? Or?
Is it my voice?
I really like that we're sort of representing a spectrum of brain states here.
I didn't even intend to. This is wonderful stuff. This is why I like having different people on the podcast, because actually we're all unique and wonderful and beautiful people.
Yeah, I definitely feel like I'm in between here. I probably have a bit of a mixture of that kind of inner voice that's very much like, maybe I'm not feeling very confident and stuff. I am a bit like, you can do it, Kim, you're doing a great job. Like, and occasionally the opposite, where it's like, oh, that was a bit stupid, wasn't it? So I have some of that. And then sometimes it's just thoughts about problem solving stuff. And you're like, oh, I wonder how this works and this, and you just go off on one for ages. But
like that you did put on a voice to, but you can do it. the voice in your head is in fact Ringo Starr.
Yeah. It's exactly the voice in my head. It's actually, wow. The revelations from this. It's just like, yeah. That is.
Do you just have him like reading Thomas Tank Engine stories in your head? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, That'd be so much more pleasant than what I have doing through my
head. I think you're poisoning the data set, Simon.
No, I'm planting a seed. So in 3 days' time, I'm just going to be getting loads of gifts from Kim, which is just like Thomas and Friends.
Incepting Thomas the Tank
Engine. Yes, I'm incepting it. That's a fascinating idea, isn't it? So I found a paper, because we do love to try and find papers on this podcast. We like to try and, you know, tie things back. A researcher by the name of Mark Scott from the University of British Columbia was doing some thinking and research into the internal speech, the sort of, you know, the monologue we hear in our head. Well, some people on this podcast hear in their head and some don't. And looking at if there was a brain mechanism that could explain how we can hear this voice in the absence of actual sound. Because if you think about it, that's a really weird thing, is that we can hear the voice, we can hear the texture to it, we can hear it, the volume and emotion in it in our own heads, but there's no audio to process. So, well, they found evidence, I should say, of a brain signal called a cholerary discharge, which I probably mangled the pronunciation of.
Sounds like a really gross thing.
Well, it's this word discharge, isn't it?
It would be corollary, not cholerary, yes.
Corollary.
Yes.
I'm going to throw it to future Simon. Please pronounce this correctly. Thanks, past Simon. It is in fact pronounced corollary discharge.
Corollary.
Oh, there you go. Thank you.
Corollary.
It's no, because the problem is now you've said the word so many times, it's going to lose its meaning. You're going to not be able to say it anymore. It's apparently a signal that helps us distinguish the sensory experiences we produce ourselves from those produced by external stimuli. So it's effectively a kind of predictive signal generated by the brain that helps to explain why, for example, in a physical context, other people can tickle us, but we can't tickle ourselves. It's about predicting movement and effectively cancelling out that sensation. So it's the same mechanism.
Studies done on what happens when corollary discharge doesn't function properly, in that if you don't have this thing that says, actually, this is you who's thinking or this is you who's doing it, do you get a Joan of Arc? Do you get a someone who can tickle themselves?
Good question. Please find a paper. I've set you a task.
Like, anyway. Can't you tickle yourself? I'm like, I mean,
try tickling yourself.
But like, yeah, but you can. Like, it tickles. Like, I mean, how much are we saying tickling here? I'm just.
But it's not as much as if somebody else was doing it, right? Your own brain is slightly cancelling it out.
Uh-huh, someone else has had this thought, which is the link. The paper's name is Schizophrenia and Corollary Discharge: A Neuroscientific Overview and Translational Implications, which is that it's possible that schizophrenics don't have a fully functional corollary discharge, which means that their internal voices might in fact sound external to them. They also use the example of tickling themselves.
Ah, well, there you go. So that would make sense, because it is, if it's cancelling that out, it's also how it plays a role in our auditory system when we process speech. So when we speak, effectively an internal copy of the sound of our own voice is generated in parallel with the external sound we hear, which is why when we listen back to ourselves speaking, we go, oh my God, do I sound like that? It's because you are running an in parallel version inside your head, plus, you know, the whole way in which your body produces sound anyway.
Your skull works, yeah.
And all those lovely sound things that I should probably know, given, you know, the fact that I edit all of this together. But we do spend a lot of time speaking, and I guess that could probably like swamp our auditory systems. That does make it harder for us to hear other sounds when we're talking. So I guess if you're using this cholerary discharge, it's like wearing noise-cancelling earphones. It's not going to take away everything, but it will take away a lot of stuff, and then you will hear the thing you want to hear.
So you're saying that some people really like the sound of their own voice because they actually can't hear other people when they're trying to interject?
I'm going to... Yes. Yes, exactly that.
Interesting, Simon.
Yes. I feel like you had a thing to say there, Kim.
I'm just trying to read at the same time as say stuff and at the same time as think.
So, back to Mark Scott. So he theorized that if cholerary discharge does in fact underline our experience of inner voice, then the sensory information coming in from the outside will be cancelled out by the internal copy produced by our brains if the two sets of information match.
I do have a related question for Kim, by the way, just to break your flow, which is that if while you're when you read something, do you have an internal voice reading it to you, which is why you couldn't focus on two things at once because of your cholerary discharge?
It's a brilliant question, because when I read, I hear it in in different voices.
I find it really hard to grasp what the hell I was doing.
It's like, sort of meta thoughts, isn't it? You're thinking about thinking.
Yeah, and then it's like, well, what was I doing? And it's, you know, sometimes
and then
I
you
know...
become aware that your brain is just a bunch of sort of squidgy jelly.
Yeah. I know sometimes when I find it really hard to concentrate, then I will read it. And it'll be, and I'll be very focused and like actually, but otherwise, I think it's just a like kind of like thing in my head.
That. This is going to sound so insulting, but I'm now just picturing the Homer Simpson thing of the monkey doing the thing. I'm so sorry.
No, but actually, no. Actually, me reading it, I am blocking out the everything else that's going on. I think, or it's like it's definitely. I definitely find everyone talking is definitely quieter when I'm trying to focus on. Wait, that's a normal thing, isn't it? I'm getting so confused at what's normal and what's not normal. And
it's
what's...
normal for you, so therefore it's normal.
I know.
Typical versus atypical.
Yeah.
Well, here you go then. Do you find yourself talking out loud when you're doing things? Do you talk to yourself out loud?
So, like, but only if I'm finding it really hard to grasp something or grasp what I'm doing, or, you know, I know that if I don't say it out loud, I will just kind of lose track of what I'm doing. Then I will generally say stuff out loud.
I dial into meetings where people like to do a safety moment and talk about something safety like. And we had somebody, they were talking about how one of the safety things they've brought in is getting their staff to literally talk to themselves when doing certain safety critical roles. Like, I am now closing this nut, I am now doing this, I am now doing that. And the study showed that they had 60% fewer accidents and incidents when people were talking out loud and effectively telling themselves the checklist they had to do.
Yeah, that's part of the whole checklist effect thing, isn't it? Where surgeries had loads fewer injuries and incidents when they just ran through the checklist verbally before they actually started the surgery, along with introducing each other, I think was the other big thing that cut down on surgical incidents.
It's the same thing you do on aircraft. You run through the checklist verbally.
Yeah.
And you both check it off and you say that you've checked it off.
Yeah. Is that just because you otherwise tend to go through muscle memory and then you're not really conscious of that necessarily? And so your memory necessarily. I don't know.
Oh, is it because you're then drowning out at your inner voice that's, you know, going, oh, look, lake?
Yeah, maybe. Because, yeah, I think, yeah, it's quite easy to just zone out and start thinking about loads of random things if you're doing something that you're very used to. I know when I was working in the lab, it was very much a, you know, you would be doing very tedious, kind of quite repetitive things. Mm. And so, you know, to try and keep track of stuff, you would have to, I don't know, just use like, maybe even like you can use voice stuff, but also like visual elements of just kind of like pointing to, yeah, I've pipetted into this line of wells and now I need to pipette into this line of wells. So that you don't just suddenly go, oh, I've completely zoned out. Because obviously you're looking at stuff, but you can, I think, mentally zone out. And then, you know, even though you've technically been viewing it, you've not really been processing it properly. If that makes sense.
So to go back to you, Kira, you say that, so I've checked up on the terms. Aphantasia is those who can't form mental images. Mm-hmm. Aneurolia is those who don't have an inner voice. So
and you can see why I only remember the first, not the second. Although yes. Fantasia obviously is visual in terms of etymology, I guess.
Yeah, how is that spelled?
Is it aneuralia?
Yes.
I'm getting neuralgia, aneurilia, which is facial pain. A-N-E-U-R?
A-N-A.
Aneuralia. All right. Right. The silent mind. Aural. Is it an aural as opposed to oral? Or as in, yeah,
I think
aural.
It's an aural, yeah.
I just found some strange things.
I mean, Stranger Things is very strange.
A nice study from 2021 called Neuralia, The Silent Mind.
Mm.
I just found that, yeah.
Because, you know, you don't necessarily suffer from aphasia, it's more aphantasia.
Not aphasia,
sorry.
That would be very different.
It is, sorry, aphantasia, because obviously you're an artist, you're a designer. I
presume
also you can
have
bring...
I also have aphantasia. I don't picture things mentally.
Do you not? Okay.
Nope, it comes
from the
pen.
Must be very peaceful in your head. Can I borrow it sometime?
Yes, I'm sort of an oasis of calm.
It does actually explain a lot about why you are often a lot more calm than the people around you.
Yes. And yes, the reason aneuralia, which doesn't look like it's a generally accepted term in the scientific community yet, because it was first proposed in last year.
Yes. To try and Yeah.
Yeah, there are 514 results for it on Google, so I think it's quite a niche term.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. There's literally this paper which describes the need for a single term.
Yeah, you seldom see things having about 500 results on Google.
Let's plug it into PubMed and see what we get there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm loving the names of these things, but also
but I think that they didn't really think through how you would pronounce the word.
Because it's our mental voice. Yes. Should we just call it lack of inner voice? That might be easier.
Yeah, perhaps.
Yeah. But it's different, isn't it? It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think it's supposed to be also a bit of a spectrum as well.
As most things are.
As most things are. Nothing binary in the world. Yeah. When I found about this, there was a really great video I watched about this. And it was also about some creative designer person that had aphantasia. And they were just like, yeah, most artists do tend to visualize stuff. But obviously you don't need to be able to be a good artist. It's just interesting in the way that the different techniques that people use then to actually kind of create things and design things is different potentially to someone that is able to visualize the things mentally in their head before they draw. It might require a lot more actually kind of just physically drawing and practicing and going again and again.
I think I'm quite an iterative artist in that, like, I make things and then I build off what I've already done, and I sort of, you know, it's the reason I do daily art is so I can just build up a big repertoire, so I'll be able to sort of go, oh, like that thing I did, or oh, like, etc.
But do you think by having a lack of internal imagery, that actually makes it easier when you're taking instruction from a client that says, I want this thing? You're not then having your own internal bias for it. You're just going to go and do what they've asked for.
I think I absolutely have an internal bias, but I'm not conscious of it, in that I don't know what the internal bias is, but it will still come out in the wash. You know, it is a black box. It's not like there's nothing in there, I hope.
Oh, there's definitely something in there, yes. I have to say that, you know, I like to keep my guests happy on my podcast.
As you continue to link me things about the recent current events.
I just wanted to see if you'd look at it and laugh. We are absolutely not talking about anything going on in the world at the moment. Although, did you see the two people got given very large fines for disturbing the MS Estonia last year? There you go. For one for the complete heads out there. Do you think, though, that you do you get, like, anxiety in a voice, or voice of reason, or any of those sort of things?
Me, Kuromi,
whoever you want to be, really, you know.
No, I don't. I mean, I can get fussed. I can get anxious. It doesn't happen very often, but it's more of a physical thing than a mental one, because I'm not conscious of what I think.
Do you if you come across a like problem or something, like with me, I'm very much like, I have to think through all the different possibilities in my head and like kind of almost go, oh, if I wanted to do this, then I could do this, and if that didn't work, then I'd do this, and then like, I just basically problem solve in my head like that. How would you go about something like that?
So quite often I don't even realize I'm distressed, especially if it's like a bigger problem or one I haven't vocalized. And that often comes out when I'm chatting to friends and I'm typing it through and I'm reading what I'm typing and I'm like, oh, that's interesting. this is news to everyone. And I work through it while, you know, discussing and talking about what's happening to me. I think therapy would probably be quite helpful on some levels, even. But still.
Yes.
Yes. Therapy is always helpful, probably on some level.
Yes, perhaps someday I shall get some.
Then again, maybe that's a challenging assumption that we have, that you can, that the inner voice speaks in words. And actually, for you, maybe it's a lot more complicated. It's not a conversation having with yourself.
Maybe
your inner voice is mute.
I don't know. If you're going to say, oh, we'll do a mental exercise where you have to visualize, I feel like that won't work. But I can talk about my suppositions. I think it's perhaps I'm more instinct driven. I don't know. But you know, I fundamentally, it doesn't bother me too much. It's how my brain works.
And your brain works very well.
Cheers.
I bet, like, in this time, though, like, I think, you know, the growth of kind of mindfulness and stuff and people doing meditation, I bet there's loads and loads of things where people are like, oh, try meditation and mindfulness. And, you know, it's like, ah, visualize the time when you're sitting by a waterfall and you're just probably like, no.
That always makes me start laughing.
Also, it's something where some people are like, oh, you know, sometimes I go to a cafe and I sit down for an hour and I sort of think. I think I'm a very task and driven person in that if I'm not doing something, if I'm not listening to something, if I'm not viewing something, maybe this is just a product of me being born after the 90s, but like, or in the 90s, that it's that I always need to be stimulated. But like, if I'm not doing anything, then I'm really not doing anything at that point. So that is a problem for me.
Mm. Oh, do you dream? Yes. I'm kind of feel like I'm going on tangents now, but I'm like,
this is just dream. an ask her about.
It's so fascinating, though. It's like, yeah.
Specifically, dream based question. I don't remember my dreams, but I'm pretty sure I remember having had dreams when I was young. I had dreams. I remember one about a pirate ship. I think in a water park. I believe.
Was that a dream, or were you just tired at Thorpe Park?
No, it was a pirate ship in a water park in the dream.
Okay.
Going down the lazy river.
Mm. Fair enough. So you don't generally dream then?
I don't remember my dreams. I don't think that's the same as not dreaming.
Okay. No, I don't think it is, no.
Yeah. That's true.
But yes. It seems like there are plenty of fields of study that would be quite interesting for aphantasia in terms of, like, do people with aphantasia dream? That's I'm going to Google that right now.
Well, I read this article and it was sort of talking about that they don't. So I was like, oh, do you?
Interestingly, some people with aphantasia do dream in images.
Intriguing. I wonder. But then again, we don't fully understand the mechanism behind dreaming either. So
it's interesting because there is like a lot of links of aphantasia and like autism and also just memory and lots of other things, and I don't know enough about it. I feel like I'm just kind of like,
you're absolutely giving me imposter syndrome of like, hang on, I have dreamt, does that mean I don't have aphantasia?
I mean, I'm currently reading an article from verywellmind.com, which is probably just some dodgy
source.
Yeah, I know. I don't know if there's any sources on this. Oh wait, four sources. One of them's Wikipedia. Ooh. No, I'm kidding. It's not. But the fact that the article is called When You Can't See Images in Your Mind. It sounds so spooky, doesn't it?
I mean, if we're going to start getting into like the pineal gland and René Descartes now, aren't we? So. Although interestingly,
is it pineal?
Well, at Tommy's, we called it pineal. I don't know. It's pine. It's the size of a grain of rice. I mean, it's been 12 years since I did nursing. So, but I remember that it was involved in the production of melatonin, which obviously, you know, helps to regulate your circadian rhythms and all the rest of it, which is, you know, I spent 7 years as a shift worker. You learn a lot about sleep patterns then. But interestingly, actually, when I was on shifts, I could go months without having a single dream. And then I would have intense, painfully strong since being on a more regularized pattern. I know I've dreamt, but I will maybe remember one or two a week. Occasionally, I have had, I think I was telling you about this one, Guru, I had an intensely strong dream where I woke up, and for a good 5 minutes after I woke up, I had to be sure that I was actually awake and that the dream wasn't the real world kind of thing. Yes. It was so...
Were you a butterfly dreaming of being an emperor, or an emperor dreaming of butterflies? As the
I think I was the emperor butterfly, so...
Indeed. Kim's just dug up a good quote that's possibly from verywellmind.com, I'm not sure.
But it has a source. It has a source.
Okay.
Would you like to read us your quote?
I shall. So it is actually from
killer.com.
A scientific article by Z Man in, I don't know, some journal called Cortex, which says...
I subscribe every month.
Oh, there we are. It basically says that people with aphantasia do experience a visual imaging while dreaming, and that the imagery of dreams originates from bottom-up processes controlled by the brainstem. Visualization, on the other hand, requires top-down processing that originates in the brain's cortex.
Hmm.
So, there we are. Yeah, I'm so fascinated by dreams. Which is quite a side tangent from Inner Voice, but
no, because we can move into that. That's the beauty of editing. I can just insert something and say, so Do you think people with aphantasia dream?
Yes, exactly.
There you go, and I can do some casting and things. See?
There we go.
And then I can talk about pirate ships.
Exactly.
A horror
movie. I'm just going to spend 8 hours recording him going, so, tell us about a lake.
Yes.
The lake is now dark.
I know. It'll suddenly be edited to the fact that I dreamt about a lake. And I'm like, I never said that.
Yeah, but you did just now, so
that's how he gets you.
It's going to be the cold open. It's just him going, I dreamt about a lake, and then the music plays.
In that case, you need to cut all three of us out saying, I dreamt about a lake, so that it can be a really interesting...
I dreamt of a lake. No, I dreamt of a lake. I dreamt of a lake. Dreaming.
Tell us about dreaming.
I dreamt so much as a kid. I had a dream diary. I was obsessed with dreams. I found it really fascinating. And I don't know whether anyone's ever experienced lucid dreaming, which is possibly, I feel like I've done it a few times and it feels a little bit like I'm always a bit like, oh, it's a bit wooey. I'm not really entirely sure what it is, but it's the experience when you are in a dream and you realize you're in a dream and you can effectively kind of control the dream. And, you know, you might suddenly be aware of it and go, actually, you know what? I'm going to walk over here. Or I'm going to start flying. And I've never been able to keep it for very long. Like I tend to wake up once I've noticed that and I start changing it. But there is a whole thing of people doing various courses to become good at lucid dreaming. And
yeah, what you do is you walk up to the closest person in your dream and say, tell me an invention that hasn't been invented yet.
Ooh.
This is starting to sound quite meta.
Yes. I mean, it is quite meta, I feel.
I don't think I've ever lucid dreamed. I've certainly had dreams where I feel like I've had a modicum of control, but I don't think I've been conscious of that at the time.
Hmm.
You never pinch yourself and go, hang on, that didn't hurt.
No, my dreams tend to be a bit more odd. They're sometimes a bit grandiose, but mostly they're just about day-to-day life stuff. And almost like it's a space and time for my brain to explore all of those rehearsed things and see if they had a different outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Intriguing.
My brain's basically just running what-if scenarios.
Quite handy. I definitely have a bit of that, but then I sometimes just have some completely wild dreams that just make absolutely no sense. And I always just find it fascinating how... I mean, this is the thing. It's the same with my visualization. I don't think my visualization is particularly good in that I feel like I will visualize a person, but like they'll be fairly blurred in terms of their face. Like I'll know it's them. And I find that the same with dreams. You know how you sometimes get a person in your dream who looks nothing like the person, but you know.
But you still know it's them, yes.
You know it's them. You're just like, ah, it's them. And then you wake up and you're like, but why did they look completely different?
So it turns out that all the people in Kim's dreams have the face of Ringo Starr.
whilst reading Reverend Audrey books, no doubt. Kim, do you ever dream about lakes?
Oh, God.
I dream about a lake.
I once dreamt about a lake. You know what? Considering I live in the Lake District, it's surprising how I haven't dreamt about more lakes.
Because you can wake up and see them.
Did your dream diary also have a thing for dream interpretation where you'd open it and say, ah, if I dreamt about a visit to a wedding, that means that I will have prosperity or something?
Yes. I mean, I didn't ever, like, I always took those things as a pinch of salt, but I always loved... reading
a boulder of salt,
hilarious. It's always like I had so many dreams about my teeth falling out, and that is the like one of the classic dreams about if you're very stressed or worried about something is that your teeth will fall out, which actually I think is kind of, you know, it kind of makes sense. I do sometimes get those dreams when I'm stressed or whatever about something, but yeah, but there's some weird ones where you're just like, what does like having a beetle in a dream mean? And it's like, oh yes, it means that you're going to like get married to someone on the 2nd of July 2027. That they're never that specific, but you know what I mean. They can be just quite ridiculous. But I've always been fascinated with some wooey stuff that is sometimes like I'm like, oh, it has some truth to it. And then other times I'm like, oh, that's a stretch. It's a stretch. Everyone's like, I don't have anything to add to this.
I've never really got the idea of dream interpretation because I've always just assumed that it's, you know,
it's random. Your brain reshuffling the events that it's been thinking about and sorting
exactly
it or whatever.
My brain just filing the events of the day. You know,
it's definitely more relevant than horoscopes because it's at least it's personalized, unlike Saturn or whatever.
Yeah, but then you get into like not just horoscopes, but then you get to like moon star signs and star signs, and like some of those get weirdly like specific. Very weirdly. On a, like, so my housemate in London, she, whenever she gets really, really, really stressed about stuff, and she's definitely neurodiverse, she, if she's very, very stressed about something, she will get the same dream like 3 or 4 Ooh. Nights in a row, like just the same dream.
That's very portentous, where it's like, I had the dream about the giant stallion again.
So, yeah. No, that's interesting. So I do have one recurrent dream. I have a recurrent dream which I get just before I'm unwell. It's what I call my fever dream. It's always the portent of I'm going to wake up and I'm going to feel awful.
I think you're getting cause and effect.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. But it's always the same dream, and I recognise it.
Tell us.
And what I don't know is whether or not I got it once and was ill, and my brain has filed it away, and then when I know I'm ill, it just replays it for me.
Oh, it's like how the smell of garlic or whatever can make you feel ill because you had food poisoning once. Or
I mean, I love garlic, so...
What is the dream, Simon? Tell us.
Well, okay, so trigger warning for anyone who doesn't like nightmares. It's a bit of an odd one, really. It's, imagine you are standing in a big open space, an empty swimming pool.
Can you do this, Kira?
And... No, he can't. I'm explaining this just to Kim. Kira's just sat there, like, doing knitting patterns
or something. I'm going to draw it.
Well, you can't draw it because it's dark. It's black. It's just... And the point is that I'm in a big space and there are voices shouting, and they're sort of shouting at each other unintelligibly. And I can't... And I'm shouting at them to shut up and be quiet, and I can't touch the sides. I know there are sides there, but it's... And it's just this overwhelming feeling of not being able to ground myself, not being able to stop these voices shouting, and not having any control over where I am and what's going on. It's completely pitch black. I can't see a thing. All I can hear is this going on. I know that if I could just get to the side and touch something, I'd be okay, but I can never reach it.
That's distressing.
It is.
It's very, very distressing.
But I think what that... You know, if I was to dream interpretation, that would say that I have, control issues, and I always need to have some kind of grounding element. And I certainly know that when I raised this with a therapist, she told me that was bullshit and to stop trying to interpret dreams. So I just don't. So have you been able to draw that, Kira? Is it just a big sheet of black?
I took my paint bucket tool out.
So tell us about your recurrent dreams, Kim.
Recurrent dream. I've had the one with the teeth falling out, but it's generally the more the theme. Or a theme is recurrent rather than the actual like necessarily thing. I've definitely had.
Do you have falling or flying dreams?
Yeah, but like nothing necessarily that repetitive. Obviously, that I have that sensation of falling thing, but that's like obviously. What is that? That's like a phenomenon, though. That's not actually like a dream. Such.
Wait, do you ever jerk when you're about to fall asleep? You go.
You get people who just they're falling asleep feel like they're falling and wake themselves up again, don't they?
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah. Oh.
Is it like sleep paralysis demons?
I don't think I've ever had sleep paralysis. Have you?
Nope.
Are you supposed to get? You're supposed. Well, I don't. No, but I mean, especially when you go to REM sleep, you're supposed to essentially be paralyzed, except those people that seem to be able to sleepwalk, then they seem to somehow are able to kind of like get up, like walk, even though technically they should be, their brain should be protecting them by stopping them from moving. Because obviously, if you're in a dream.
Yeah, I had knew someone in my old school who used to sleepwalk to get like a glass of water in the night, and he was in the sanatorium, and the sanatorium had large French windows, and he walked out of a window and fell like a story or two, but was fine.
Oh, Christ.
And they were like, we're going to stop these windows from opening all the way.
Oh my God.
Because somebody walked out the first story windows. Maybe we should just put a lock on these. It's almost like being in a youth hostel.
We've only recently put restrictions on some of the windows, and like literally right at the end of a massive youth group having like a load of youth groups having come through, and then they were like, oh yeah, we should probably put these on because it keeps loads of kids seem to just keep going through them and falling on their heads.
So your friend sleepwalks out of the window at school.
No, this was I'm now beginning to wonder. Yeah, but it. It was one of those things where like they were like, okay, this is a good reason to upgrade the the windows, or downgrade them, depending on the perspective. But yeah, sleepwalking is a thing.
Hmm. I definitely have, like, delirious dreams, like, where generally when I've been processing a lot of information or data, so there was like, I actually think I'm probably the worst person ever to get to, like, input data, because I get very, very hyper focused into it, and I find it very hard to have breaks, because I'm just like, I will submit all of the data, I will input all of the data before I go on a break. It doesn't matter how much data there is, even if it's this task probably needs to be done over several days or weeks or months, my brain is still like, input the data, input the data, input the data. And then I swear, whenever I've had those days, I end up, it's the same kind of with coding as well. I think I should never code and I should never input data, because I end up just having delirious dreams where my brain is just inputting data and all I see is just streams and streams and streams of data information. And I always just have this very delirious sleep when I do that. So yeah, two things I should never do.
But what I found lovely there was also we heard the Dr. Kim inner voice come out there.
Is it? Oh, what?
I'm going to have to find like some bedding music to play when you do inner voice.
Yeah, I feel like I'm not aware of it most of the time, so I need to re-listen to this podcast and be like,
see, this is for me. This is, I mean, I have the double thing of I think possibly the reason my inner voice is more to the fore for me than with others, and I discussed this in a previous episode, was I had an unfortunate bout of PTSD back in 2011, effectively lost the ability to speak. I just like a stammer. It would take me 10 minutes to get through a sentence. And one of the methods that I was taught for dealing with that was to run through the sentence I want to say ahead of time in my brain. And effectively, the way it was is I was running into roadblocks. Certain words would just be a roadblock. So I'd have to step sideways and go through the gap and then sort of going through. So the Swiss cheese sort of, if you like that image instead, apart from Guru, who can't image things, is trying to find a hole through. So I'd substitute different words in the sentence because I would be going ahead and my mind would be testing the sounds of the word to see is it going to trip me up and make me not be able to speak. And I think that's become so ingrained, I'm constantly doing that. So I have total monologue always running ahead to try and say the thing I want to say. And so when I do that sort of stop thing and I lose my words, it's because I've hit into one of those roadblocks and I haven't been able to come around it again. So I can see in the distance the thing I want to do, but I can't say it. And then that becomes quite distressing, because I'm like, I should be able to say the thing I want to say and now I can't, and now I feel awful. And then it's the whole imposter syndrome thing and everything else. I do sometimes, well, you know, and this sometimes is the thing that trips me up, is that I'm running through that mental monologue while I've got three other things going on, going, oh, look, late, and I need to do this piece of work, and I want to text Kuro, and, you know, all the other things that are going on in your brain anyway. And I'm trying to run through what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's why, for me, my inner monologue is louder and more constant, is because it's low grade running my, it's a learned response, absolutely, and it's running my ability to speak. Because if I don't, and I know you've both noticed it occasionally, if I'm particularly stressed or tired, stammer comes back because I'm not running ahead far enough, and I'll end up just coming to a stop because I can't get round to the word.
Interesting. Thank you for sharing.
It's okay. You know, right. Nobody else is going to hear this, so I'm only talking to two people, and the rest of the
anything
English
else
world.
We want to cover when we're talking about monologues, so to speak.
Is there anything else you want to talk about? Does anyone else want to monologue for a minute? So it's not just like me putting a downer on everyone by talking about, you know, things like that.
Ooh. I mean, I'm just kind of trying to have a Google, because I feel like there's probably loads and loads of stuff about stuff. I've just found Sick George. The varieties of inner speech questionnaire. Sounds interesting.
Oh, go on. Run us through the varieties of inner speech questionnaire.
It's interesting because, yeah, there's different, like, the key words of this article says self-talk, hallucinations, rumination, private speech, and self-regulation. So I'm kind of like, I'm quite curious as to see whether or not they've maybe like categorized the type of inner monologues or inner speech that people have. Oh, here we are. So
items are scored on a 6-point Likert scale. I think to myself in words using brief phrases and single words rather than full sentences.
Pick out a question you want to ask me and Kim, and I'll pick one and Kim will pick one.
Okay. My thinking in words is shortened compared to my normal out loud speech. For example, rather than saying to myself things like, I need to go to the shops, I will just say shops to myself in my head. Simon?
I don't know, because I think because I possibly because I think Well, we all think quicker than we speak, right? So possibly I will say, I need to go to the shops, but then my reminder will be, oh, shop.
Mm, Kim?
Yeah, I think I do that. I wouldn't necessarily say I would simplify it so much to just shops, but I might just be like, shorten it to like, rather than it being like an entire sentence or something, I might just be like, this and this. And like, yeah, I do definitely think I do that, for sure.
Can I get a bonus one? Which
go
is,
on.
I think to myself in the second person, saying things like, you can do this, or you forgot to do that.
Oh, God, yeah, I do that a lot.
Yeah, I do that.
Interesting.
It's very judgmental, that voice as well.
Yeah.
I was sort of picturing it like a dungeon master, like you approach a...
Yeah, I'm just playing D&D in my head. That's all it is.
There are exits to the west, north, and east.
No, because then it'll be John Robertson's Dark Room. You awake to find yourself! Sorry. go on, Kim, ask us the question.
Well, I think related to that, which, you know, I think I definitely do have that, but I don't have this. I hear the voice of another person in my head. For example, when I act in a certain way, I hear my mother's voice in my mind.
Yes, No?
Well, of course not.
No, of course not. Sorry. No, of course not. Stupid Simon, you've forgotten that. But you see, I just heard a voice in my head saying, Simon, they literally just told you that. Why did you even ask it?
But you wouldn't say stupid Simon. You'd say forgetful Simon, because you shouldn't be self-deprecating.
you have met me.
Yes, I said shouldn't. I didn't say aren't.
Thank you.
What's yours, Simon?
My train of inner verbal thought can lead me to feeling very excited.
Oh, yeah, I would say so. I think particularly if I'm problem solving something in my head, and I'm kind of going back and forth. Or I guess not necessarily problem solving, but also like, you know, if I'm, you know, really, I don't know, I'm interested in something and I'm like, oh, I wonder what would happen if this or this or this, or, you know, I'm sort of fascinated by something. Can I, you know, start thinking about it? Then I definitely would get excited by that.
I think that although I've sort of emphasized the positives of not having an internal monologue, there are, of course, some negatives as well. In that, no. Although, what I would say, I think the closest thing that is for me is that sometimes in a conversation, someone will say something, a few seconds will go by, and then I'll say something that appears to be completely left field. And they'll say, why do you say that? And I have to basically forensically work through what tracks my brain would have had to have jumped, even if I don't know specifically what those tracks were.
Yeah, so I get your point then about sort of the thought goes in, it goes through some kind of black box process and pops out the other side, and you can't necessarily interrogate why
I can forensically
A came out
it
as 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, but I sort of I know thyself. I don't know myself as well, but at the same time, I do know generally how I function, so I can sort of generally speaking work through it. And you know, you can do the conscious thought thing where you're like, I will now verbalize this. What was I thinking?
That's fascinating, really. I mean, we've been talking for a little while now, and I do think what we've shown here is that even in just a admittedly slightly small grouping of three people, but we have three very different ways of looking at inner voice and inner monologues, and also dreams and how we picture things in our minds. That's a fantasia thing, especially for someone who is a very good and accomplished artist. I find that absolutely fascinating, because I struggle with imagination. If I've not seen the thing before, I find it very difficult to natively create something new in my head. But once I've seen a thing, I can maybe I do have an AI running in my head, because you tell me to do koala on a motorcycle. I can picture that. That's fine. Not a problem, because I've seen koalas and I've seen motorcycles. They can go together. But if you ask me to imagine something completely new, I can't do that. And so I think that's really interesting how the three of us have got different ways of doing it, and yet we all somehow managed to survive in the world. And you know, it's very interesting to sort of hear both of your experiences around dreaming and sort of that story about your sleepwalking colleague from school. So no, thank you both again once again for joining me for this episode. It's obviously a little bit shorter than last time's was, and we hope that you all have a lovely weekend, and we'll speak to you again in a couple of weeks. Take care, everyone. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.
I think I need to get some soon. Work through various things. Life would be so much easier without like emotions and stuff, wouldn't it? Still,
I don't think that's not necessarily a healthy or not a positive indicator if you begin to say
it's fine.
Things
I'm going to cut that bit out, and I will still sound perfectly normal.
Please do go to therapy.